3 weeks ago, my friend Matt asked if I wanted to go camping. Since I had wasted my entire summer working, I agreed. I needed a break from chores and my boring office job. As the weekend got closer, Matt kept adding people to our camping trip. Soon, it went from us to six people. The SUV I inherited from my mother could fit all of us in our bags if we squeezed in, but I felt like dropping out of the trip. I knew if I did so, then they all couldn't go because Matt had a smaller car. I'm the type of person that dislikes crowds and prefers to stay indoors. Eddie was coming along, and I didn't think he was a bad guy. He was just very loud. I dismissed my feelings knowing that some strife in my life would be good for me. Just because I would be slightly annoyed by a few things that weekend wouldn't make the trip unmanageable, but I could sacrifice a little comfort for my friends. We packed everyone into the SUV and started. I will admit, by the end of the 2-hour drive, I was very glad to get out of the driver's seat. Eddie refused to listen to the non-smoking rule, and his constant abrasive jokes made me slightly consider driving into oncoming traffic. If it weren't for Sophie distracting him as much as she did, we would have never finished the drive. Me and her were close in high school. I fell off talking to a lot of people because of my busy schedule and had been worried there would be a distance between us. That wasn't the case. We easily picked up right where we left off as friends that day. I parked the SUV in an empty lot near the start of the hiking trail. I was surprised by the lack of other cars around. I'd assumed it would be busier. Matt told us he knew of a great camping spot by a lake, but it would be a nearly 2-hour hike. I playfully groaned. We had left after lunchtime, and now we wouldn't get to the site until almost dinner time. It was a 2-hour hike for a normal person. Our group wasn't the most focused or motivated to use our time properly. We all made sure to use the washroom before heading into the woods. Getting all of our gear on took at least 10 minutes. I never knew how long a group of people took to drag out a simple task. I kept my mouth shut, knowing there was nothing that could be done about it. I stayed silent when Jessie realized she had left something in the SUV and asked to go back 5 minutes into walking down the trail. Instead of reaching the campsite at around 4 as planned, we might get there closer to 6. We could be cutting it close to getting set up while it was still light out. But no one appeared worried. Everyone broke off into groups of 2 as we walked. I listened to Sophie as she caught me up on all the things that she had been doing this summer. Since I only worked, I just nodded, letting her talk, knowing my life was too boring to say much about. An hour into the woods, we came across another person on the trail. He had been the only other sign of life aside from the sounds of birds in the trees. Our group caught up to him and the stranger stopped to greet us. He wore a gray baggy sweater, even though it was far too hot for one. It was nearly autumn, but the summer heat hadn't let up. He had a massive camping pack that looked to weigh more than his thin legs should be able to carry. Matt and Eddie were at the front of our group. When the stranger stopped to wave at us, we all stopped for a chat, and to take a small smoke break for some.
"Are you all hiking or camping?" the man asked with a smile.
He sounded slightly southern with a warmness to his voice that instantly made him appear trustworthy. Matt nodded down towards the trail.
"Camping. We're setting up near the Big Bear Tree," he lied.
It was a massive tree in the middle of a clearing that someone decided to carve a simple bear face into the bark years ago. It was a good landmark and near the end of the trail.
that's a good spot, even though people do say it's bad luck. I'm just here for the gathering. I'll stop by the ranger's cabin on the way out. Have you all checked in yet? He asked. A mesh bag holding some mushrooms hung from his pack along with a batch of plastic whistles. He looked overprepared for anything, let alone a day trip out into the woods. Do we need to check in? I asked, unaware. The group gave me a look. I considered we might need to pay a fee to camp, and they all wanted to avoid it. The park runs on donations. Even if you can't afford one, you should let the rangers know you're still all here just in case. Do you have a GPS? He suggested, the kind smile never fading from his face. Yes, it's not our first camping trip, Matt stated, a little annoyed. This man was the kind of person who had issues getting along with. He looked too clean to be the kind of person to enjoy the outdoors, like he was only foraging to film content for his TikTok account. I glanced down to see he was wearing flip-flops. Seriously, who hiked in flip-flops? The man adjusted his pack, not appearing to be offended by Matt's tone. Do you all have whistles? He offered. We all shook our heads. At the same time, Matt pulled out one. Gracefully, the man set down his pack and took off the whistles to offer them to us. He explained he wanted to buy one, but it was cheaper to buy them in packs, so he handed them out to the others he saw in the woods. When he bent down, the bag collar of his sweater exposed a toned chest for a second. Sophie and Jesse noticed first, and Sophie, not so discreetly, punched my arm until I followed her gaze to see what she was so excited about. To Matt's displeasure, we were all handed whistles. The man knew he was overstaying his welcome and placed the bag onto his back. He winked at the girls, showing he noticed their interest, which caused them to pretend as if they weren't looking. I tied the whistle to my belt loop and needed to suffer through the group teasing me that the man hadn't winked at the girls, but in my direction. Jesse pretended to be upset that Matt gave the stranger the wrong campsite, joking that she wouldn't mind meeting him in the middle of the woods at night. We finally found our campsite after a long walk, sweating in the heat. All of us got to work setting up tents and playing around. I had only ever set up a tent twice in my life, and needed Sophie to help get all the rods in place. Once it was set up, I offered to help collect firewood, but the task had already been covered by Eddie and Ben, who had behaved until then. They did the job halfway until they found branches that looked like swords. That distracted them for a while. Matt disappeared for a while. He came back before dark holding a bag of items that would mean we were going to have a better dinner than canned beans and hot dogs. Since he went camping more often than all of us, he knew what was edible in the woods. He collected something I had never even heard of until then called chicken of the woods. It was a fungus that tasted pretty good, sauteed with a few other things he had brought along. The sticks Eddie and Ben found weren't totally enough to last the night. I helped Matt chop up some larger dry branches with a small axe brought along. I mostly brought wood to him and then took it near the fire instead of doing any of the actual work. Matt appeared to enjoy chopping too much to hand the task over. I thought everything was going well so far. After dinner, Eddie brought out a joint for himself, and with some pestering from Ben, he grabbed another one and shared it with the group. I refused when it was passed in my direction and gave Sophie a surprised glance when she took a hit. I had never seen her smoke before. The booze came out next, and the group started to get louder, retelling stories from school. A bottle was passed my way, and I raised a hand to refuse it again. Dude, you're not driving, you can have some, Matt said, trying to force the beer into my hands. I had no choice but to take it as I passed it over to Sophie. "Are you too good for my cheap beer or something?" Matt said in a tone that made everyone stop talking and nervously look in our direction. "What? No, man. You know I've never really drank," I said, trying to calm everything down.
"You could have one,"
Sophie said, holding out the bottle again, trying to get me to take it. I looked over all their faces, confused about how this suddenly became such a big deal. I never liked the way that alcohol tasted, but normally would have one drink to get people off my case. I also hated what weed did to me and only smoked it once. Smoking and drinking were simply not my thing. I never thought anyone would ever get offended by something like that. It wasn't as if I was stopping them from enjoying those things. "I don't want one. I don't think it's a big deal," I said, my hands raised in defense. My old friend leaned in, the cold bottle pressed against my arm and her blonde hair falling on my shoulder. "I think you need to grow up," she whispered. The anger in her voice stunned me for a second. For a moment, only the crackling of the fire was heard. I didn't understand the sudden turn of the mood. I knew it might not be a good idea to continue with the conversation, so I stood up. "I'm heading to bed. It was a long walk for me today," I announced. Matt looked away at Eddie as if he was sharing an inside joke. "What, is being out of the office too much for you?" Ben joked, trying to lighten the mood, but he failed. "Yeah, actually. I'm not outside much anymore, so I'm going to pack it in," I said, and hated how my voice sounded. "I'll see you guys in the morning," I added in a more relaxed voice. I left them by the fire and sat on top of my sleeping bag. It was too hot inside the tent to cover up. My head swam over what all of this was about. I started to question all of my actions that day. Yes, I did get annoyed with the smoke breaks, the loud jokes, and how long the hike took, but I never said anything. Was I giving nasty expressions all day that I wasn't aware of? Or was all of this something else? I considered that none of them wanted me to come along, but they had used me for the ride. Well, aside from Sophie, but now I wasn't too sure. But why? Was it my full-time job or my career goals? Matt was working at his father's shop. Ben was unemployed, living with his parents. Eddie was, well, Eddie. He crashed at different places until he gets kicked out. Jessie was a waitress, and Sophie said that she was doing a lot of social media things and had recently started to get paid for it. None of them worked a 9-to-5 job like myself. But who cared about that kind of thing? Did they all really assume I was looking down on them for their lifestyles? Was I overthinking all of this? Or did all of my friends actually hate me? It sucked being in the dark with all those questions in your head as your friends chatted and had fun outside. I decided then that I just needed to get through the weekend and then most likely not bother to hang out with these people again if they really didn't want to hang out with me. It hurt, but I wouldn't have time to do anything besides work and school when classes started up again. Despite the chattering thoughts and emotions swirling in my chest, I slowly drifted off to sleep, unaware that not just a busy lifestyle would prevent me from seeing my friends again. I woke up in the middle of the night in the darkness, disoriented to so many different sounds coming from outside the tent. I stumbled outside, taking a full minute to get free and into the cool night air. My eyes slowly adjusted to the moonlight so I could see what was causing all the noise. Ben had stumbled out of his tent and collapsed to the ground near the fire pit, crying out in pain. One hand clutched the side of his head as tears streamed down his red face. Without warning, he started throwing up. I got to him just as he finished emptying his stomach and then curled up in a ball.
What's going on?
Jessie asked as she stepped outside her tent with a flashlight.
Gross,
she whispered mostly to herself when she saw the mess.
Ben?
I had knelt next to him, my hands awkwardly hovering, unsure of what to do.
Don't touch him,
Matt snapped when he saw what was going on. I gave him a dirty look and held back a snappy remark.
Is everyone feeling all right?
I asked the small group.
Are you saying I gave us food poisoning?
Matt said and started to close the distance between us.
No? Well, not on purpose.
Listen, if we know if anyone else is sick, we'll know if it's something we all ate or just what Ben ate, I tried to explain.
Matt was having none of it. He raised a fist as if he was gonna hit me. All of a sudden, a noise cut through the dark, causing us all to freeze.
Eddie had started to laugh.
He tossed his head back, and the sound came from him chilled me to the bone.
It didn't sound like him. Hell, it didn't even sound human.
Did these guys have anything heavier than the joint after I went into the tent?
We all stood stunned, unable to move, listening to the awful sound.
It's too loud,
Ben whispered on the ground. Both of his hands went to the side of his head to press down on his body, rolled back and forth.
Shut up, shut up, shut up!
Ben's voice started low and then grew louder than Eddie's laughter. He suddenly shot up and took a red-hot log from the fire pit with his bare hands. I grabbed a hold of him before he hit Eddie with it. He didn't even notice his burnt hands as I got him to drop the smoking wood on the ground.
I said make him shut up,
Ben shouted, and it made Jessie and Sophie take a step back. What happened next was so sudden it made it impossible for the rest of us to react. A shape came charging out of the woods, making ungodly noises. It ran past us and directly into Eddie, finally silencing his laughter. His body was knocked aside and bounced hard against a tree. The girl screamed, and I jumped back, shocked at the sight. In the moonlight, a large buck stood, dark-eyed, looking over us as if it knew what we were. Matt acted first. He picked up a bottle and tossed it at the deer in a blind panic. That was a bad idea. The next few minutes were a flurry of movements. The deer charged through the campsite, tearing up tents and nearly crashing into us. It was a miracle that no one else was hit by the crazed creature. It fled back into the woods, dragging Matt's tent behind by a rope that had been caught by its leg. Ben slowly sat down, hugging his knees, looking oddly calm. I stood, breathing and looking over the damage. We needed to get the hell out of there and fast. I reached into my pocket. Relief flooded my systems when my fingers touched my cell phone, only to have it be taken away, seeing that there was no signal. Does anyone have a working phone? I asked the shocked group. The girls held on to each other, not moving. They were too frightened to think. I turned to Matt, who had slowly been taking two steps towards Eddie's body. I wanted to see if he was all right, but at the same time, I wasn't sure if it was wise to move him. Do you have one of those satellite phones? I asked Matt, unaware that would set him off again.
Not all of us are made of money like you, he snapped.
I was taken back.
What the hell was with all these people that day?
First of all, that has nothing to do with this situation. And second of all, I'm barely supporting myself. I shot back. My stomach rolled from the stress.
This is why I hate hanging out with you. It always goes back to your dead parents,
Matt yelled in fury. I stood, my mouth slightly open, unable to process any of this. I shook my head as if that would help. Eddie could be dead before the morning. We needed help for him soon. Without a working phone,
Our best bet was to get back to the SUV. I remembered the man we had met on the trail and how he had mentioned a ranger station. They should have a radio or a way to contact someone in some emergency.
I'm gonna rush back to the SUV. Matt, you know the woods better than anyone. You should go to the ranger's cabin and ask for help. Anyone is welcome to come with me back to the car, I offered.
Strangely, Jesse and Sophie shook their heads. At first, I thought they were going to go with Matt, but they offered to stay behind at the campsite with Eddie and Ben. I nervously glanced at Ben, who sat silently since the deer ran off. There wasn't much we could do for Eddie right now. And if Ben snapped, the girls could get hurt. And it was possible the rabid deer would be back. And yet, they both wanted to stay behind. Neither could drive, so it wasn't as if they could go to the SUV instead of me. I accepted their request and borrowed a flashlight to start heading down the trail. Matt was going to collect himself before starting on his way to the ranger station. I had only taken a few steps down the path when I heard screaming in the dark from the campsite I had just left. Against my better judgment, I ran back into the woods only to get cut off by a deer running in front blocking my way. More screams came from the forest as I helplessly stared down the animal in my way. There was something wrong with the way it looked at me. I stepped to the right, and it took a step to the right. I moved to the left, and it moved left. The movement made a chill run down my spine. The creature raised a head and let out a long, haunting noise, drowning out the other sounds. My body jumped, and I started to run to what I thought was back towards the campsite. I raced through the woods with all sorts of noises echoing through the trees. Some sounded like the girl's screams, and other noises were something I didn't think anything natural could have made. My heart raced as my flashlight beam bounced across the forest floor. I was blinded by fear and didn't see the sudden drop off a steep hill. I stopped too late and ended up sliding down the slope, rolling, and losing my grip on the flashlight. My body slammed against hard rocks and exposed tree roots. Exposed skin was torn and bruised from the fall. I ended up at the bottom, dazed and in too much pain to move. It still felt like I was rolling for a long time. I knew I needed the move, and yet I couldn't. Through ringing ears, I heard a voice coming from above. Are you all right? Unable to speak, I raised a hand with a thumbs up. The moonlight was bright enough to see the outline of the stranger we had met on the trail earlier. He was missing his pack and had changed into a darker sweater. Hang on, I'll get you. I wasn't able to protest before he started down the hill that had taken me out. He glided down as if it was a mastered hobby of his. He stopped above me, leaning over me to get a better look at my injuries. Did you hit your head? Do you think it's okay to move you? He asked.
Yeah, I'll be fine. We need to get back to my friends. They're in trouble. Weird stuff is happening, I told him, and slowly started to sit up as I spoke.
I felt a hand wrap around my wrist, and with ease, he helped me back up to my feet. To my embarrassment, he bent down on one knee, offering to carry me on his back.
I'm not a koala, I replied to his silent offer. This way is faster.
I hated that he was right. I accepted the suggestion, and with his longer legs, we were up on the slope within the minute. My entire body hurt, and I was silently thankful I didn't have to struggle up the hill.
So, Mr. Koala, what's your name? I'm Arlen.
My face turned sour.
Michael,
I muttered, and started to head back towards where I thought the campsite was. He stopped me and tapped his nose as if that meant something. I smell your fire pit in this direction, he said and pointed the other way. We hadn't seen any other campers, so the only fire in the woods should have been the one that was us. I very faintly smelled smoke, but that could have been because of his suggestion. I followed him, going as fast as my body would let me. "What are you still doing in the woods?" I asked him. With everything that happened so far, I didn't trust a stranger out in the woods. If the deer wasn't acting the way it had, I would have assumed all my friends were all on a bad trip. Something was going on, and he might have been connected to it. "I was ambushed by a feral squirrel. I needed to ditch my pack to outrun it. I was hiding from it until I heard screaming," Arlen explained and looked over his shoulder. "No matter what happens to you tonight, at least it wasn't something that embarrassing." I coughed to hide a laugh. Wrinkles appeared at the corner of his eyes when he smiled. Some of the tension of the night broke for a few minutes. I needed some humor to collect my thoughts as we made our way back to the campsite. Any kind of calm disappeared from my chest when we arrived. Trails of fresh blood was scattered throughout the clearing. The fire pit had been trampled and embers were flung around the site. Arlen walked over to stomp out the few spots that threatened the spread to create a larger fire. Something shone in the moonlight. I bent down and picked up Eddie's lighter, which had been abandoned. "Was I in the wrong?" I asked myself, unaware as I spoke out loud.
"What do you mean?"
Arlen responded in a patient voice. It was odd having someone ready to calmly hear me out after everything that had happened. I wasn't certain if I could fully trust him yet. Either he had nothing to do with all the strange events, or he wouldn't believe the rabid deer story. "A friend of mine got hurt pretty badly. I left to head back to the car because none of our phones had service. I should have forced someone to come with me. I mean, what happened after I left? What is even going on?" I shoved the lighter into my pocket and started to bite my thumbnail. It was a habit I thought that I had outgrown. "You couldn't force them to come with you if they refused. I wish I had more answers for you. I do find it odd you all didn't have service. Has it been spotty all day?" he asked. I realized our phones had no issues before dinner time after he asked the question. I suddenly felt guilty for standing around talking with fresh blood on the ground and no signs of my friends. My phone had stayed in my pocket ever since falling down the slope. I wanted to double check to see if there was still no service. My heart raced when I saw a single bar on the newly cracked screen. Sadly, the bar was gone the moment I tried placing the call. I held my phone out as far as I could reach as if that would help get a signal back. I was distracted by the night sky for a second. Faint streaks of light crossed the sky. I didn't think there was a meteor shower that night, and yet a handful shot across the darkness. Arlen reached over and took my phone. I protested a little, but he held it up out of my reach.
"I'm taller," he pointed out.
The extra height did nothing to help get my connection back. We gave up and I tucked the phone away. I asked Matt to head for the ranger station. I wonder if he had left and then something happened to everyone else. Even if he didn't reach the cabin, maybe it would be better to go there to get help than try to find everyone. "But I didn't know where it is," I said, frustrated over the events of the night.
"I'll take you there,"
Arlen said, and turned to start walking away.
"Really?"
I said, a bit shocked. Since I had met him, his expression had never changed. He was still the friendly person we had met on the trail. He wasn't fazed by the sight of blood or finding me at the bottom of a hill. And now he was offering his time to a stranger instead of just leaving the woods.
"Yes, why not?"
he said, amused by my reaction.
"You don't even know us."
The words just slipped out. I try to help others when I can, but I rarely ask for anything if it's beyond an easy task. Someone going out of their way for me was such a foreign concept at that moment in my life. "I don't know your friends, but I know you. You're a koala in disguise," he joked. This was not a moment for humor, and yet I accepted it. It wasn't as if I could handle any of this on my own. I needed to trust him, at least for now. Before we left the campsite behind, we glanced around for a flashlight. We weren't able to find one, but I picked up the axe Matt had used for firewood. It felt far too heavy, and yet I didn't want to leave it behind. I silently followed behind Arlen, praying our hike to the ranger's cabin would be easy. Things are never easy. We walked for a while. In the dark, it was hard to tell time. I hurt from the fall, and my chest was tight with stress. I gripped the axe handle so hard the rough wood rubbed into my palms. The events of the night ran through my head. No matter what, I couldn't think of an answer to what we saw. If there was something in the forest that made the deer and squirrels go feral, then why did Ben and Eddie get sick? We all ate the same food. Those two drank from different water bottles. If it was a tainted stash, then that didn't explain the deer. Suddenly, Arlen stopped, his body tense. His dark eyes stared off into the woods as he saw something I didn't. I wanted to ask him what was wrong, but I was scared the noise might bring trouble. Then, a whistle cut through the darkness. I gripped the axe tighter and my hand felt light. We caught each other's eyes and he nodded. I grabbed the plastic whistle that he gave us and blew on it, answering the call. There was a pause and the sound was returned along with a distant cry for help. I wasn't sure which of the group it was. I just felt glad we had found someone. I started forward towards the whistling sound, stopping only long enough to figure out where it was coming from. Each minute was agony until I saw a figure through the trees. "Ben?" I shouted and lowered the axe. His head turned towards me, his face red and wet with tears. I'd never seen Ben cry before. He was always the rock of the group. And now he was stuck to the spot sobbing because he was so glad we found him.
"It's so dark out here, I got scared. Did you bring Mr. Hoppy?"
He sniffled, rubbing his eyes like a child. I had stopped a few steps away from him, confusion seeping into my expression. "Mr. Hoppy?" I asked, getting a very bad feeling over this interaction.
"I want to go to bed. It's dark, but I need Mr. Hoppy to sleep," he explained, and large tears threatened to start again.
"We're going to the ranger's cabin. Maybe Mr. Hoppy is there," I said, trying to keep my voice from shaking.
"No, it's too dark and scary out there. I don't want to be left alone. If Mr. Hoppy isn't here, you'll have to help me sleep instead."
His hand reached out and took a hold of my wrist before I could react. His grip was so tight I thought it would crush my bones. Still, I couldn't bring myself to raise the axe in my other hand to attack my friend.
"Hurry up and join us so we're not alone."
To my horror, Ben reached up and took a hooked finger inside his mouth. He started to pull until the flesh tore and ripped away. He didn't have any reaction of pain as he opened his mouth so wide it looked like his lower jaw had unhinged itself. His flesh pulsed unnaturally. Some blood came from the rip, but the wounds healed over, giving him a forever wide mouth gruesome appearance. I started trying to pull away, finding it impossible. His expressionless eyes stared into my own as panic overtook my body. Another ripple ran through his face, and all of a sudden, the flesh on the left side exploded outwards in gore and twisted shapes. It was as if the bloody kind of vegetation was trying to get through his skin and flusting with his flesh and bone. I felt the axe hand get ripped from my hand. Then someone grabbed the back of my shirt with a powerful hand and pulled me backwards as Ben kept a hold of my wrist, extending his arm. With a single swift cut, Arlen chopped off Ben's arm at the elbow. I felt myself get lifted off the ground for a second. Then we were running. Ben didn't follow, but let out a scream similar to the sound the deer made before. We ran until my legs gave out and my lungs burned.
I finally stopped, sweat stinging my eyes and my face burning. I felt something on my arm and disgust rose in my throat when I realized Ben's hand had not let go. Silently, Arlen helped me pry the fingers off of my bruised wrist, and then he tossed the arm deep into the woods. I collapsed against a tree. My face was in my hands and my body shaking. Not only was I mortified over Ben's face transforming the way it had, I was ashamed over my reaction. I had a weapon in my hand. If Arlen hadn't been there, I may have died just because of the shock. A noise stirred me from my misery. Arlen had started to whistle a song, his back straight and staring off into the woods. He noticed I was staring at him and he stopped. "I whistle when I get nervous," he admitted, and for the first time, I saw a hint of stress on his face. I could understand that, but did he really just have to pick, "Always look on the brighter side of life"? "Not the best song for the moment," I commented, trying to stay collected. "I think it's the best song for the moment like this. Sure, we saw something terrifying, but we got away, right?" he pointed out, his smile appearing forced. I was going to agree with him, but something far worse than Ben found us. Due to all the noise we made from running, it could have been following us for a while without us even noticing. "Hey guys, spare some snackies?" The voice belonged to Eddie, but it was all wrong. The words were choppy and unnatural. I stood up, legs shaking far too much to make a run for it. I wished the moon wasn't so bright that night. I wanted to never see what walked through those trees towards us. A deer hobbled along, carrying extra weight. Coming out from the base of its neck was the chest of a longtime friend. He hung upside down, arms swaying and fingertips nearly touching the ground. More of the almost flower-like growths circled where they had been fused. The monster stopped walking and stared at us with two sets of eyes. "Alone." This time, the word came from the mouth of the deer using Eddie's voice. Something cracked as the deer's head started to turn. Slowly, Eddie's upper half rotated around, making him and the deer head trade places. He reached out his arms as if offering an embrace. "You snackies or friendies?" he asked, head jittering with each syllable. The monstrosity charged forward, wanting our flesh. I pressed my body hard against the tree, cursing my body and refusing to react the way I wanted it to. Arlen planted his feet hard on the ground and braced himself. He used the momentum of the creature against it. The Yeti creature realized its mistake the moment the axe blade was planted in the middle of its face. It dug down deep as Arlen pressed his entire body against the handle. His feet were pushed back, digging up dirt. He lost both of his flip-flops he had been wearing, and yet he didn't even react to the twigs and rocks cutting into his soles. They both stopped, Arlen keeping the monster's body still standing. He backed off, letting go of the handle and letting them both fall. He then leaned down with his hands on his knees, breathing heavily. The monster twitched, and the deer head started to move upwards as if trying to replace Eddie's. Arlen moved fast. He planted a foot against the creature and ripped the axe free. He brought the weapon down again and again. Splashes of blood flew from the attack, covering the front of his sweater and even splattering across my clothing. He kept backing until the handle broke off in his hands. His last attack was to drive the wood down deep into the mess of the deer skull. Silence came over the forest aside from his ragged breathing. He looked over at what he had done and lifted his sweater to clean away most of the blood off of his face. His eyes landed on me, and then he looked back at the mess at his feet. "Excuse my French, but shit." He paused to gesture towards the pile of gore at his feet. All of whatever this is, he finished.
That used to be my friend, I finally answered.
The word hung heavy in the air. His expression changed to pity when he looked back down at the mess of flesh and bone. The body twitched, and I worried that it would get back up again. We needed to move before that happened.
We're not that far from the ranger's cabin. Come on.
With some gentle prodding, Arlen got me moving again. I hated all of this. I hated how I froze up and how every sound off in the woods made me jump. And I hated not having answers. Arlen stopped for a few seconds, checking the trees and ground as if he was tracking something. He also glanced up at the sky. I wondered if he knew how to get around based off the location of the stars. He noticed being watched and pointed towards a pair of fallen trees. I've memorized a lot of these key locations of the woods, so I know how to get back if I get lost, he explained. Are you from around here? I asked him. This forest was huge. Surely, he would need to come back here countless times to remember so much of it.
No, just a good memory, he shrugged.
He was flexing his hands at his side as if they were in pain. Taking down that monster must have taken a toll on him, and he was walking around without shoes. I wanted to offer him mine, but there would be no way they would fit.
What kind of people are your friends? I mean, what are they like?
Arlen asked as he kept his head directed forward. I knew he just wanted me to talk to keep me distracted from the horrors we had witnessed, but I was going along with it anyways. Ben was our rock. No matter what, he was the calm one of the group. If you had a problem, he would be there to listen. But around Eddie, he acts pretty goofy. It was the only time I'd seen him let loose a little. I told him, fully regretting ever agreeing to take everyone camping this weekend.
What about the other guy we met?
That was one way to put it. My stomach churned, thinking about Eddie as the image of his body fused to the deer came to mind. Eddie was never that bright. Kind of annoying, if you ask me. I tended to avoid him if I could, but he wasn't a bad guy. Far from it. Super kind, always sharing what he had. He was also good with animals. He found an abandoned and abused donkey when we were just starting high school. That year he took care of it was probably the best year of that donkey's life. I stopped walking. My body suddenly felt heavy. I didn't want to move. I just wanted to bury myself deep into a hole and never move from one spot again. I felt tears threatening to overtake me as I found myself chewing so hard on my thumb the tip started to bleed.
I'm sorry, I just...
I started, my voice uneven. Arlen simply gave me a thumbs up, knowing I needed a few seconds to collect myself. I didn't understand him. He acted so calm and helpful to a stranger. How could he not be a mess after taking an axe to the monster that tried to do God knows what to us? He didn't rush me. It took a minute, but I pushed aside my misery to keep moving forward. Seeing the light of the cabin took a massive weight off of my shoulders. I rushed forward, wanting nothing more than to get a hold of a person that could help us. Again, a hand grabbed the back of my shirt and I was dragged aside. I had gotten in front of Arlen and an odd serious expression came over his face. He nodded silently, telling me to stand behind him. I listened and mentally got ready as dread filled my chest. If this place wasn't safe, I didn't know if I could handle it. Arlen's hand slowly went for the door. Then all at once he pressed it open while standing off to the side. A person on the other end swung down an axe hard into the ground, then stumbled forward. In a flash, Arlen disarmed him and pinned the stranger to the ground with a knee on his back.
"Let me up, you psycho!"
the person shouted, his face red with fear and pain. He was deemed to be not a threat, and I helped him off the ground. Arlen picked up the new metal axe and went inside the cabin to look things over.
I followed behind him, and the stranger cautiously did as well. I almost got sick at the sight that greeted us. The small cabin had been covered with blood. The headless bodies of the rangers had been left behind by whatever had attacked them. I forced my eyes away. My hand covered my mouth in case I got sick. The smell of blood was overpowering. Arlen walked over the bodies and straight to the bulky radio on the other side of the room.
"It's broken."
The stranger told us. The words made my heart sink more. At least finding another normal person was a good sign, and I was certain the trail led from the cabin straight to the parking lot. We would be on the right path instead of stumbling around in the woods at night. I had my back turned from the center of the room. I didn't see one of the headless bodies get up, but I heard it. I spun on my heel, blood racing, terrified to see another one of those monsters. The bodies stood up unsteadily, feet appearing like puppets on a set of strings. Arlen had sat down the axe to look over the radio. Everything felt to be in slow motion. A burst of the flower-like fleshy growth came from the chest of the creature. It opened up, revealing a pulsing blue light encircled with countless half-formed hands. By the time Arlen grabbed the axe and took a few steps in our direction, a set of tendrils shot out, aiming at the man beside me. I picked up a wooden chair that had been placed near the floor to use as a shield. The flesh of the tendrils hit hard, forcing me back and splitting the back of the chair. It fell from my hands, and I held on to the large pointed piece. Without thinking, I charged, aiming at the end of the wood into the blue light. Countless splinters dug into my hands, and I forced all of my strength into plunging my makeshift weapon downwards. The thing convulsed, the back arching. The light went out, and the growths shivered up. The body fell back to the ground, taking the piece of wood with it. I stood, breathing hard, looking over what I had just did. I guess monsters are easier to deal with when they don't look or sound like your friends. The newcomer stood shell-shocked. Arlen walked over and rolled the other body onto its back. The chest started to move, ready to open up like the other one. He brought down the axe a few times to ensure the creature stayed down. Then our attention was drawn to the stranger in the cabin, expecting answers. "What are those things?" I demanded. He crossed his arms and turned to face away.
"What makes you think I know?"
he shot back, huffing. I reached over and took hold of a swipe card attached to his belt loop. He was wearing a short white lab jacket and didn't appear to be a hiker. He snatched away his card, knowing his cover was blown.
"I can't get you a lot of details." He started, appearing nervous.
Arlen shifted the axe a little, and the man raised his hands in defense.
"I'll tell you what I know. Who are you two? Hikers? Ex-military or something?"
he suggested. "A citizen and a koala," Arlen answered, and I wish he would drop the joke. I looked over to him, trying to spot a lie. I did expect him to be at least involved in all this, or have some sort of military training. He took down the deer creature all on his own and found his way through the woods in the dark without any shoes. Was Arlen really just some random person who got caught up in all this like the rest of us? The guy narrowed his eyes doubtfully of Erwin's words, but kept talking. "There was an outbreak in a different forest a bit of a distance from here. We're still studying it. We think something infected the local plants and then got passed on to the animals." I glanced down at the swipe card again, trying to see if there was a company name. I only saw his initials printed on the bottom of the card.
"Tell us, JC. Can this infection pass to humans?"
I said, and nodded towards the two bodies we had just put down. His face turned pale, and he frowned with a slight shake of his head.
"Yes. Eating a tainted plant or an infected animal can pass it along. Or, well, an infected human can infect you too."
My head started to spin. I nearly fainted at the news.
Not only did my friends turn into monsters, but they had been trying to change us as well. I realized something, and it nearly put me over the edge. Can you be infected by eating tainted mushrooms? I asked, dread clear in my face. Are chicken in the woods mushrooms or fungus? Arlen added, mostly talking to himself. Oh yeah, did you two eat some? We both glanced at each other and nodded. JC's shoulders dropped, disappointed, the two normal humans he had come across maybe ticking time bombs. We haven't come across a lot of humans coming into contact with this infection. There is a small percentage of animals that don't react to whatever is causing all this, but we have seen people turn after 7 or 8 hours of being exposed. The biggest sign of the infection is a personality change. Some people revert to a childlike state, and others just become extremely violent. If you've studied this, then there must be a cure, I said, almost too desperate to think clearly. JC pointed towards the body of the previous ranger at our feet. The flesh was still twisted from some unnatural disease. You think there could ever be a cure for something like that? He explained. My knees gave out and I slid down the wall. With some quick math, I assumed that I only had until sunrise. Then I would become like my friends. My body changed in gruesome ways and my mind gone. The only way to deal with this is fire. It seems like whatever carries this mutation is extremely flammable. JC added with a shrug, not even concerned over our fates, or he was hiding it very well. Why wasn't the park closed? I replied. I wanted to sound angry, but I was just so tired. I wasn't certain whether this forest had been overtaken or not, and no one wanted to spare the manpower to double check. Our hands are full because of the other location. I hired a private security worker to come along to confirm what I had suspected. Then you got spooked in the woods, ran off, and got separated from them? Arlen suggested. Despite the horrible news, he hadn't dropped his smile. He only appeared a little tired, but not on the verge of a mental breakdown like myself. JC's face turned red, showing what was really going down. Hell, I didn't blame him. At least he found his way to the cabin alone instead of relying on a stranger for help. I'm meeting Cassidy here. We'll protect you and get you out of the woods. There is a very, very slim chance either of you aren't infected. JC suggested, recovering from his embarrassment. And if we are? I added, barely able to keep my head up. He didn't answer. I knew why. We would either be killed on the spot or taken away to be experimented on. We never should have come here. My voice sounded as bitter as I felt. Since we might be carrying this infection, can you at least tell us where it came from? Arlen asked, his voice calm. I knew he was trying to keep the conversation going to distract me from my misery. JC frowned, uncomfortable from the request. He had been told not to disclose the information, but felt like we were owed it. He pointed upwards at a small hint. I didn't understand what he was implying. It's a biblical event? My new friend asked innocently. JC's face flushed red and he jabbed with fingers upwards a few more times. I'm gesturing towards the night sky, he huffed. I forgot about everything for a second as the implication hit me like a ton of bricks. We were dealing with something that came from space? Like some sort of alien disease? Was that even possible? I didn't have time to dwell on it. I'd been too stressed out to be thinking clearly. I had completely forgotten what I had asked Matt to do the last time I saw him. He was supposed to come to the ranger's cabin. His body wasn't here when we arrived. That meant he should be out there in the woods. I was unaware he had been finding his way here the entire time. Arlen's body tensed. I quickly stood up, causing JC to look at us confused. I was closer to the door and made it outside first.
Countless streaks of light flew across the night sky. The sight should be beautiful, but it chilled me to the bone. Someone was waiting outside for us just at the edge of the clearing to the cabin. Matt's clothing was stained with fresh blood. He lifted a heavy object and tossed it closer to us. A severed head of a large buck landed hard. The dark eyes still opened and the mouth moved slightly. I was scared to see what he had become, but I also felt so tired.
"Why are you here? I thought you were heading to the car," Matt said, sounding almost normal.
His voice had a distant sound to it. This figure looked and sounded like my friend, but the features were just off enough for me to know he was too far gone.
"I got sidetracked," I admitted.
So far, he hadn't acknowledged the two other people.
"I did what I was told. I came here. I took care of the deer that bothered Eddie. They all asked me not to. All of them, my friends. They wanted me to join them, but you guys were my friends first,"
he explained, his eyes looking forward and yet past me at the same time.
"Where are the girls?" I asked him, with foolish hope for a good answer.
"Sophie is at Big Bear Tree. I can't hear Jesse anymore, or Ben." Matt's eyes trailed off to the woods as he expected our friends to be close by.
JC said he came with someone. I considered they had come across Ben and Jesse and silenced them. If that was the case, then it meant that Eddie wasn't dead even after getting hacked apart.
The world started to spin as I thought of him not only transforming against his will, but lying injured and alone somewhere. Death would be better.
"They wanted me to take you all with me. There are so many voices telling me what to do," Matt said, his head turning back to face us.
An odd cold rage bubbled under the surface. His flesh rippled along his cheeks, but he didn't act just yet.
"I'm sick of it. I was jealous of you. You know that? You don't have any parents ordering you around. You didn't have siblings. You're alone. No voices are bothering you."
I found myself taking a few steps back. I knew Matt worked hard to support his large family, but I was never aware of how that had affected him.
"Hey, let's trade places. Let me crawl into your skin and you be in mine for a little while."
Matt's expression changed into a deranged smile. Arlen knew Matt was serious about the idea. He darted towards me, axe in hand, ready to fight. Yet again, I was too scared to act. Or rather, I couldn't bring myself to move. Deep down, I felt like I should die in those woods. Arlen didn't agree. A batch of flesh tendrils bursted from Matt's back. I grabbed JC and pulled him out of the way. The unnatural appendage crashed into the window that had been behind him, the shards of glass slicing into the flesh, causing it to recoil in pain. Most of the tendrils went for Arlen, seeing him as the biggest threat. One wrapped around the handle of the axe. He held onto it with both hands and tugged on the ground with his feet, trying to stay on one spot. He was painfully dragged along, refusing to give up his weapon. With a massive pull, he brought Matt closer, then suddenly let go of the axe. He moved too fast for his opponent to react. With one swift movement, he pulled out a small object from his pocket and grabbed a hold of one side of Matt's head to keep it steady as he stabbed a pin deep into the creature's right ear. He screamed in pain, the tendrils wildly flailing around. He wobbled on his feet, trying to recover. Arlen didn't give him the chance. The metal axe had been dropped out of arm's reach, but that didn't matter to him. He grabbed Matt's shirt and tossed him to the ground. Matt reacted and gripped the pen from his ear, but it was too late. Arlen took a hold of his skull with both hands, lifting his head above the buck's antlers. There was a struggle as Matt used all of his strength to keep his head raised. Arlen, his weight to slowly force down Matt's body, both of them shook with effort and sweat dripped from Arlen's face. Slowly, he won the silent fight and lowered Matt's neck onto the tip of the antler.
Blood bubbled from his mouth as the rest of his body felt limp and his eyes rolled back. When I grabbed JC out of the way, I hadn't let him go. I felt him grab a hold of my arm, fear overtaking him, and he wasn't ashamed to hold a stranger for support. Matt's face started to transform. The fleshy flowers spouted, covering his eyes, and his chest moved as if countless insects were moving under his skin. He was going to become some sort of monster we couldn't deal with in a few seconds. Arlen didn't give him that chance. He briskly walked over to the fallen axe. He moved without any wasted actions. He brought down the blade, splitting Matt's skull in half. With some effort, he removed the weapon to bring it down again and again in a robotic way. I was terrified at the moment. Not of what my friend had turned into, but what kind of person Arlen was. I didn't know the first thing about him. JC had said people who were infected had a change in their personality. Arlen was brutally efficient when it came to attacking the creatures we came across. Deep down, I knew he hadn't changed because of the infection. He had always been this kind of person. The world around me started to fade. I wasn't aware that I was on the verge of fainting. JC needed to drag us back into the cabin as I heard the sound of the axe coming down again and again. Mentally, I simply shut down. With some effort, JC sat me against the wall to let me rest for a few minutes. When I opened my eyes, everything was quiet outside. JC was rummaging around looking for anything useful inside the cabin. He found a few cans of spam he put aside. The thought of food made my stomach twist. I curled up, back pressed against the wall and knees tucked hard against my chest. Footsteps came closer, and I almost hoped it was another monster coming inside the cabin. Instead, Arlen slowly sat down next to me. His clothing was drenched in sticky blood, but he had at least cleaned off his face. I pressed my back even harder against the wall now, afraid of the person who had been protecting me the entire time. "It should have been me," I said mostly to myself. Arlen gave me a gentle, questioning look that made me a little bit less scared of him. I couldn't bring myself to admit to him I wished I had died in the accident that killed my parents. If I wasn't around, then maybe my friends would still have lived. I shook my head, saying something else that had bothered me all night. "I'm a guy. I should have been the one to end their suffering, not you. I just stood there like a child every time," I admitted, hating myself for my actions that night. "How old are you?" he asked. 20? I lied. He knew and waited for the right answer. 19. I lashed out and punched his arm. It didn't do any damage, but he pretended it did. "What's the point of being born a guy if I was too weak to do anything?" I snapped. I've always been the smallest and weakest of the guys in our friend group. None of them really teased me about it. The issue had always been at the back of my mind, and now I've found out how useless I really was. Arlen reached over and took a hold of my hand. I was confused and let him place his next to mine to show off the size difference. "People are born different. Some are good at running, while others have asthma. Just because you can run faster and longer doesn't make you any better than who can't. You have different skills. Who cares if fighting isn't one of them?" I chewed on the inside of my cheek, letting the words turn around in my head. I knew he was just humoring me and trying to make me feel better, and oddly enough, it worked a little. "I still should have," I started, but lost the strength to finish the thought. "I've dealt with monsters before. It's something I'm made for." I raised my head and studied him for a minute. I wish I understood more about him. Was he here on purpose or by chance? I surely couldn't have been lucky enough to meet the one person prepared to deal with this kind of situation and was kind enough to help. The cabin door slammed open, causing all of us to jump.
JC let out a high-pitched scream, which we decided to ignore. A massively tall person decked out in military gear stepped through the door, a large blade in their gloved hand. They reached up and removed the helmet and mask, covering their face, letting waves of long red hair spill out.
"Do you have a hair tie?"
she asked, directing her freckled face in our direction. Arlen and I were too stunned to reply.
"Cassidy!"
JC said and rushed over to her. She was at least 2 feet taller than him. He found her a regular elastic so she could put it in her hair. "Isn't long hair against some sort of regulation?" Arlen commented after he recovered. "I'm in the private sector, come on." She turned, ready to leave. We stood up and headed towards the door. For once, things were slightly looking up. I doubted we would have any issues getting through the woods with a tank like her on our side. She looked as if she could take down a charging bull if she wanted, and yet had a soft, kinder face that didn't match her cold tone. I considered the slight chance I wasn't carrying the infection, that when the sun rose, I would be alive to carry the weight of this night. Our group started walking down the trail towards the end of the woods. My hand went into my pocket to feel the items tucked away inside. I started to close my pace until I stopped. Arlen noticed first, then the other two. "I'm with you until the end," Arlen said, already knowing what I was going to say. JC appeared confused, but somehow Cassidy knew what the look was on my face meant.
"We're not going back," she stated.
"I need to see Sophie," I said, and JC opened his mouth to protest.
"Just leave her. There's no way she's still human," he pointed out.
I knew that. Hoping that she was all right wasn't the reason why I needed to go back to find her. I shook my head and he took a step away from Cassidy. She grabbed JC's shoulder, keeping him in place.
"Not my job to protect you. Not them. We're leaving."
He looked between her and us, knowing he was unable to do anything to help.
"We'll wait for you at the end of the trail."
I felt like I smiled for the first time that night. We said a few quick parting words and turned to walk deeper into the woods. We didn't see any more infected animals along the way. The sky had gotten a little bit lighter. It made it easier to see. The forest didn't appear right. The plants were still, but out of the corner of my eyes, I could see the leaves and blades of grass turning. I could see the leaves and blades of grass turn towards us as if the entire forest was watching our backs. I wondered just how far the infection spread. The night had taken a toll on Arlen. He kept a tight grip on the axe handle, but he let it dangle at his side. His smile was strained, and he let me walk in front. I followed the trail, knowing it would lead back to the path that branched out to the large tree in the center of the forest. We found the clearing, and he waited at the edge. I needed to do this alone. The tree is larger due to the new growth. The flesh-like flowers sprouted from the branches, replacing its leaves. Countless bodies of all kinds of animals had been pressed and twisted into each other around the tree, giving it a new shape. A raccoon came from the woods with flowers sprouting from its head. It didn't look over at us and kept walking. The tree accepted it into itself in a silent fusion of flesh. What was left of Sophie was in the middle of the tree facing us. Her eyes had been covered by the flowers and her lower body fused into the tree. Her long hair flowed down, moving in the silent breeze. I should have been afraid of her, but I thought she looked oddly beautiful. A light came falling between the branches. It appeared to be a blue ball of flame that seeped into the ground when it landed. JC had been telling the truth of the infection coming from the sky. How many other places had been taken over so far? Had it only been this forest and the other?
I was starting to wonder where you were. Sophie spoke, sounding a bit tired. Come over here and join us. She opened her arms wide in a tempting offer.
In a second, I want to talk first.
She nodded her head but didn't lower her arms. How did you all feel about me? I mean, do you blame me? Were we all actually friends?
She moved her head from side to side, considering the question. Normally, she wouldn't answer such questions, but she was no longer herself.
We were friends. We all loved you. Relationships aren't perfect. We are only human. I suppose near the end, I was starting to get jealous of you. All your hard work paid off. I grinded away at my social media accounts for nothing. Meanwhile, you had no support. You got back on your feet after your parents' death, and you got to college unlike the rest of us. It felt like I was losing you.
I never knew all this. I wish I'd paid more attention or even talked with them more. I should have valued our time together instead of rushing to get to the next step in my life.
I don't blame you for any of this. None of us do. We're happy like this, no longer being human, no longer alone. It hurt at first, but now after we shed who we could live in bliss with all the other voices. Now come and join us. Let us spread to the rest of this world and become one with everything. I moved towards her, wanting nothing more than to take her up on the offer.
Arlen made an effort to stop me, but he was blocked by a pair of infused deer. He hacked away at them, yelling my name and telling me to stop.
I kept walking until I reached Sophie, letting her arms wrap around me. Her cheek pressed against my own in an embrace I never knew I wanted from her.
I always thought of you as a sibling. You were the best family anyone could have ever asked for, I said and pulled away from her a little.
She didn't understand why I bothered telling her something like that. After all, once we fused, she would know everything about me. She wasn't aware of my hand reaching into my pocket to pull out a small object. I lifted it under her exposed stomach and stared at her face, trying to find the traces of the human she had left. I didn't think this was the right choice. It just felt like something I needed to do. My thumb flicked on the lighter twice, and Arlen screamed at me to stop. Within a second of the small flame coming to life, it spread to Sophie's body. She let out an ungodly scream and pulled away, unable to stop the fire from rapidly spreading. Her body went up like paper soaked in gasoline. The flames spread to my clothing and heat forced my eyes shut. I had never felt so much pain before. The only thing I was aware of was the unbearable heat and the screams coming from the transformed tree. A strong hand pulled me away and forced my body to the ground. Arlen frantically put out the flames with his hands. His body is over on top of mine. I opened my eyes to see a new expression on his face. He was furious.
Leave!
I started to tell him. To my shock, he slapped my cheek. Not hard, but enough to derail my train of thought.
Don't you ever take the easy way out!
He snapped with such force it knocked some sense into me. I blankly stared at him, never expecting such an outburst. The fire had already spread through the tree, causing it to scream. Smoke rolled along the ground, making our eyes water. With some difficulty, we both stood up, coughing and moving our exhausted legs forward. The fire was moving faster than us. Each infected plant and tree let out a high-pitched noise when the flames touched them. The sound of the flames was drowned out by a sea of screams. My legs faltered and Arlen stopped long enough to lift me onto his back. We weren't going to make it out of the woods on foot. I closed my eyes, only regretting letting him close along with me. A new noise came ripping through the woods. JC shouted our names and Cassidy scooped us up onto the back of an ATV. She wasted no time shearing it back down the trail, kicking up dust and moving faster than the flames. I think they were trying to keep me awake. I tried to keep my eyes open, but they drifted shut. I passed out not seeing the sunrise that night. I woke up in a cold white room. At first, I thought I was dead. But then the dull pain all over my body reminded me I was still alive. My arms, chest, and right side of my face had treated burns. The room didn't have windows, so I could only guess how many days I stayed there recovering. The nurses who came in and out for treatments didn't say a word to me. Finally, JC entered the room. The dark bags under his eyes revealed how stressed he had been while I rested. He set a change of clothing on the side of the bed. He then placed a clear bag with my repaired cell phone and Eddie's lighter next to me. "You're in the clear. No signs of the infection. We tested your blood about 100 times to make sure," he announced. At least that was some good news. "And Darlin?" I asked. "He's fine too. He wasn't as injured as you were, so we already released him. I added his name and number to your phone." JC sat down next to me and then leaned in close as if he wanted to gossip. "How long had you and your friends been with him? I mean, what do you know about him?" he half whispered. "I met him that night. Did you find out anything?" I half whispered back playing along. "I looked him up. Arlen's father was like a Texas oil tycoon or something, and his mother was a mistress. She died of an overdose when he was 16. But you want to know the weird part?" I felt wrong listening to all this. It was as if I was invading Arlen's privacy after all he had done for me. But then again, this was all probably public knowledge. His father's wife died in a boating accident. Then his father died of a heart attack. He had a half-brother and a sister that the company and all the money should have gone to. His half-brother was shot by some cartel in Mexico, and his younger sister drowned when she was 13. Some think she did it on purpose. Because of all of that, he has more money than he could spend in a lifetime. What are the chances his entire family dies in random ways years apart? And what was he doing in those woods? I asked him and he said he was foraging. After hearing all that, I understood his reaction when I asked him to leave me behind. He must have had regrets for being unable to do the very least to protect his little sister. Was that the reason why he protected me? Did he want to make up for not being there for her? "Do you think he's more deeply connected to the infection?" I said, also wondering if it was possible. "Maybe, but I haven't found any signs of it. I hate to admit this, but my company has been keeping samples of the infected instead of destroying all the traces of it. There is money to be made if they're able to turn people into weapons." He let out a sigh and leaned back, unable to hide his distaste over the idea. "You might think I'm crazy, but I don't think he's working for anyone. I'm pretty sure he was in the forest by chance and he's just weird," I admitted. JC gave me a side eye but didn't argue. There was enough evidence for either option to be true. "Now what? Are you going to threaten to kill me if I tell anyone what happened?" I suggested. He waved off my words and shook his head. "Nope, fuck this company. I want you to tell as many people as you can about this and get the word out. The issue is we don't know how many places are infected until humans get involved. There could be hundreds of places, or none. I would rather us be the ones that track these places down instead of random campers like your group stumbled into. Even if he reached one person and convinced them not to go into the woods, I think it would be worth paying Cassidy to go back and get you two." I wanted to hug him, which was weird because I'm not normally a touchy person. I had considered it would be better if I died years ago, and now I had a chance to make my life mean something. JC didn't understand how important his words were to me. We finished up our conversation, and he said I could leave whenever I felt ready. To be honest, I don't know how widespread this mysterious infection is. I pray that the company JC works for is able to defeat it before others get hurt. I sent messages to Arlen thanking him for the help. He's a bit busy out of the country looking for truffles of all things and promised to hang out with me once he gets back. Rich people are pretty weird if you ask me. I don't have the resources Arlen and JC do. I can't do much to help save people or stop this threat on my own. The only thing that I could do is warn people The only thing I could do is warn people there may be unknown things lurking in the woods waiting for people to find it. I was lucky I left those woods alive. So, do me a favor and skip the camping trips this year. Maybe go to the beach instead.